Can you tell me a little bit about synagogue?
Very important. Extremely important. Throughout my whole youth, we had one rabbi, and he was very dominant, and his wife used to help him out. Rabbi Kenner, you've heard of him?
Oh, yes.
We were not his favorite, because we couldn't sing. His favorite were women with big breasts and people with beautiful voices. My father was like a slave. He was the secretary treasurer of all the Jewish societies, of the synagogue, of the Y, MHA, of the Bnei B'rith. He was never president. He was always the slugger behind the thing. Once my father came back from an annual meeting of the shul with a black eye. Yeah, I'll never forget it. And this is why I like to stay out of synagogue politics. My father, who was really the backbone of the synagogue financially, chairman, you'll see a picture of him in there, of the education committee, etc., etc., had dared to ask one member of the community who was delinquent in his dues for years, and never took any participation in it, happened to be at an annual meeting, and he asked the man to pay up his dues. The man got up, hit my father in the eye, broke his glasses, gave him a black eye, and my father was reprimanded by Rabbi Kenner, not for all his good deeds, but for asking for the thing, and he sort of blamed my father. So I never had the feeling that Rabbi Kenner, to me, was a friend of the family. He was more a friend of the wealthy, powerful, and as I said, girls with big breasts, and the people with a beautiful voice. He was a good suck, but by God, he ran a good congregation. And it was a strong congregation. And that congregation is still going today. And I've put a lot of the credit to that, to Rabbi Kenner, and the people he taught. He couldn't teach me. I couldn't sing the prayers. It was terrible. I was lucky to get a bar mitzvah out of me. But you got to give credit where credit is due. And he really knew who to suck up to and who to promote. Do you know that Jack Yaser died this week?
I heard. Yeah. Shirley Chernin told me.
Yeah. Shirley?
Yeah.
Oh, I gave one of the books to her this week.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah,
oh,
nice. I gave her two books, one for her and one for her to put in the shul.
Uh-huh.
I hope it gets to her. I gave it to Tootsie. Nathanson's, I'm not sure which one, had an unveiling at the same time as we had our brunch at the Cambridge Suites.
Mm.
Okay? So I came to go to the brunch at the appropriate time, but Shirley had already left.
Mm-hmm.
Had already left the breakfast for the unveiling of the Nathanson. But Tootsie was there, and I gave her one of these books for Shirley. She mentioned she wanted it at shul before, and one for the shul, which I'm sure will get lost. It's sad to see the shul in Sydney. It was a Baptist church taken over by the Jewish community during my time. And then when I went back years later, they had renovated the synagogue, and it's still a beautiful building. And as I said, I was just home recently. There was a Shabbos Kiddush, so it's still very vital, but it's very, very sad. The youngest people are usually in their 80s, are older than me, like Shirley, and the visitors from away are the mainstay of the summer. But one of the things that Rabbi Kenner did recognize was the beautiful talent of the Dubinsky clan. And and the Shabbos service was run by Evie Dubinsky and her husband, who's not a Cape Bretoner, but they live in Cape Breton now. But the bad news is that Evie is not well. She's got secondary cancer. And, you know, they are the backbone of that community. What will happen when they go? I miss very much Sylvia Dubinsky, the sister, the oldest sister. She was married to my cousin Louie from New Waterford, Louie Allen. And her children are wonderful people. And it's Shana, their daughter, who's now living in New Waterford and partially caring for her dad. Leon Dubinsky, Rise Again, that is beautiful.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful song. Apparently the story, you know the story of that?
Which one?
What?
Which one?
Yeah, which one? The one why he composed it for his father's yahrzeit?
Oh, no.
That's why, yeah. But again, that's the Dr. Rabbi Kenner's influence, teaching Leon Dubinsky and recognizing the Dubinskys as a singing, wonderful, talented family. Leon's okay. They have a place out in Englishtown.
That's right.
You been?
I haven't been, but I've spoken with Leon.
Oh my God, it's
he loves
it's worth a trip.
Yeah.
The reason they got that, their father, Sylvia, now deceased, Leon, his brother and younger sister, ran what they called Sydney Ship Supply. They supplied the ships. Their father supplied the ships that would come into Sydney Harbour. And amongst the ship requirements often was halal meat, lamb, sheep. So he bought the farm to raise sheep, according to Sylvia. And that's why the community now out at Englishtown came into being. It's beautifully located, worth a trip. And that's where Evie and her husband have retired, and Leon lives there full time. But again, this all stems from Rabbi Kenner's building of a community and recognizing the talent of the Dubinskys. But we couldn't sing. I didn't. My sister didn't have big breasts, and my father was a worker bee, not a queen bee. So Rabbi Kenner to me is respected, but not dear in my memory. I hated Cater, but I stayed there, boy. I used to get the annual gift of best attendance, but I was not a good student, and I'm not a great Hebrew scholar. And I was going to tell you about my musical career in cornet. My father says, I'm not going to waste any money on teaching you. He sent my big brother for lessons and my two sisters for piano lessons, and they plugged away at it, and they were not bad. He just handed me a cornet and a book. He said, here, learn. So I did. I learned three songs. First was March of the Men of Harlech. No trouble. It's easy in the book. Then was God Save the King. It was next in the book. And then he died. And then I knew how to play God Save the Queen. So I figured three repertoire. I put the cornet down. I've never played any instrument ever since. So that's my musical background. Yeah. Yeah.
What other ways did you spend time with the Jewish community? Were there other things going on besides the synagogue and the Haider?
Oh yeah. As a youth, I was there. Young Judea was very important, very important, and I rose to be what they call the Rosh, the head of Young Judea in Sydney. And it took a lot of time. I just yesterday was going through my old records and I found an issue of Hashaleach, the messenger. Under my guidance, we put out the first, it was a Gestetner, that's how you could reproduce the thing, the first issue of Hashaleach for a couple of years. And we had a babysitting business to support it. Mostly me and my sister Harriet, we did the babysitting. We couldn't get many other people to do it. So Young Judea was very important. in our lifetime. And of course, every day after school, except Friday, we would go to cheder and spend at least a couple hours getting there and coming home. Every Friday night, shul, every Saturday morning, and every Sunday morning, Sunday school. So the shul took a lot of our time. When we weren't in school, our extracurricular activity was Young Judea, very important. We were very proud. We had the highest collection of money for the UJ, for the JNF, the Pushka, and we would collect it, and we did very well. And then one of the leaders of the Jewish community called me in when I was head and told me to stop this. We're winning all the rewards, and the other places in the Maritimes aren't winning, and that we must stop being so good. Boy, I'll never forget that. I couldn't believe it.
Things you never but expect to hear.
No, I expect to be here. You know, you're doing well. Keep it up. No, no. We're going to change. If you don't stop collecting the money, we're going to change the rules so that you can't win all the awards for the JNF. So no, Young Judea was very important. But more important to me was the Baptist Church. Yeah, because that's where I went to Boy Scouts. Yeah, one night a week with my buddies, we'd go to the 4th Sydney Scout Troop. And that took a lot of time. I went to the Canadian Boy Scout Jamboree in 1953 with the Nova Scotia Cape Breton contingent. And I was just back to the 60th reunion. And I wrote an issue, an article in the Academy Record on the Boy Scout Jamboree. It was in the shul. One of the Nathansons, Stephen?
Sure. Yeah.
He decorated one of the rooms with excerpts from the Academy graduation, with the Jewish kids' graduation pictures and whatnot. And amongst them was my article on the Boy Scout Jamboree, and it's going into that new book on the essays. Yeah, no, very important. The synagogue was a very important part of my life.
When you were at Boy Scouts, who would you meet there?
Who would I meet?
Yeah. From what other communities?
Well, once a week we would meet, and I would meet mostly my classmates. And that's why I joined Fort Sydney Baptist Church Boy Scouts. There had been a Jewish Boy Scout troop before my time. It had become defunct and it no longer existed. But mostly I would meet there my classmates. However, at the Boy Scout Jamboree, which was held here in Ontario at the Connaught Rifle Ranges outside Ottawa, I met not only people from all across Canada, but I met people from other countries. It was quite an experience for a little kid from Sydney to go to this jamboree. But I was very religious at the time. And I put on tefillin. You know tefillin?
Sure.
Every morning, I don't care whether it was raining or whatnot, in the kits, I put on my tefillin. I was not crazy religious, but I was extremely observant. Again, the effect of Rabbi Kenner, that I'm sure, and my family, my father, you know. He didn't put on tefillin, but he made us go to shul every Friday night and every Saturday morning, even though the stores were open. And that's an interesting part of the role that the commercial played in our lifestyle. What was that going to say?
You were at the Jamboree.
I was at the Jamboree, and I put on my tefillin every morning, and I was observant. And who the heck was the head of the Boy Scout Jamboree? A Mr. Boyanner from St. John's, New Brunswick, a Jewish man. And he brought the Jewish Scouts from across Canada. I think there were three of us together. So your question is, who did I meet? I can't remember their names or where they're from, but I met two other Jews from across Canada who were at the Boy Scout Jamboree. Very, very highly, very important. We traded... badges, very similar to what I saw going on here with the Pan Am Games. We traded badges, and it was a wonderful experience. And I'll never forget, we marched. The Nova Scotia contingent marched to the bagpipes. Yeah, that's the great thing to march to, bagpipes. The Scottish heritage. Yeah. I met I still know his name, but I met a black guy from Annapolis Valley. Very, very fine gentleman. Those are the people that stick out in my mind. I remember I was an honor guard for the Princess Elizabeth before she became queen. She stopped it with her yacht at the government wharf in Sydney, where the Big Fiddle is now. And I was stationed on that hill leading from the wharf to the Esplanade. And we held back the crowds. Had a lot of good experiences. Boy Scouts, amazing. It's funny, my Paula is in charge of the photographs for my book, and we're looking for a photograph of me as a Boy Scout. Don't have any to go with the essay on the Jamboree. It's somewhere around, you know, but most of the photographs now are on computer. Mm. Not in those days, they were pictures printed, and those are lost. Yeah, so to me, very important was religion, family, Boy Scouts, Young Judea, these activities were important. School was important to me. I was not a musician, and I was not a sportsman. My career, I was a big fat kid, and every morning you would play, every recess, you'd play football. You'd give the kid the ball and he'd plow through. Well, that was no trouble for me. So in the early years, I figured I was a great football player. You know, they'd give me the ball and I would score because I was so fat and heavy. So when I got to high school, I figured, man, they used to call me Stanley Steamer. Stanley Steamer's going to be a big man at campus. He's going to join the football team. We didn't play football, we played rugby. So the first day, I went out on the Ashby Diamond to practice for the team. First day, grade 10. Man, all they did was calisthenics. Me, I never exercised my whole life. I never joined the Y or anything. I was just a big fat kid. So I said, it's worth it to be a great football star in the high school. They're a great position to play. So I did the exercise. And then at the end he says, once more around the track. Oh, geez, I was so tired. Anyway, I went around the track. I went over my ankle. It blew up. I had to go to the doctor. I had to have it strapped. And my career as a athlete was finished. Instead, I played curling. I was in the curling. That was the best I could do. So I was not a musician. I was not an athlete, but I was a good student. Yeah. I never forget one of the greatest achievements. We had only one high school. We had a ladies' Catholic high school, but we only had one general high school, Sydney Academy. And I had the highest marks in grade 10, second highest marks in 11, and second highest marks in grade 12. So I was a good student. Before we got in, they lumped all the grade 9s together, and I had the highest mark in the city in grade 9. So it wasn't a fluke. And I didn't, you know, I studied, but it just came natural. I was a good student. So I was a student. I was a scout. I was a leader in the Young Judea, but I was not a musician. I was not an athlete, but I had wonderful memories. I was spoiled. I had a good time.
Did you go to Camp Kadima?
We did not. I did not go to Camp Kadima as a camper. I wanted to. My big brother Norman was one of the founders of the Camp Kadima when he was a leader in Young Judea. But my father, you know, it was hard to make a living. He was not a rich man. He did not have that extra money to send us. And we had the bungalow next to the Gorelics in South Park. So we never got to Camp Kadima, my sister and I. My big brother and I think even my sister did. But that was before they had the bungalow in South Bar next to the Grelks. And when I got into university, I spent a summer at Camp Kadima as a counselor. And it was a wonderful summer.
Can you tell me about it?
Camp Kadima, very important, and still is. My cousin Tootsie's son is now the director, David. This was his first year. And I get the shalom. You ever get the shalom?
No, I don't. I'm part of the Union for Reform Judaism, so we get that newsletter.
Instead. Yeah, well, no, yeah. I, no, the shalom is for expatriate maritimers.
Oh, okay.
You have to subscribe to.
Oh, maybe my dad does.
I bet he does.
Yeah.
And Shalom makes a big deal about Camp Kadima. Mm-hmm. And I remember the wonderful summer I spent there. And my son in Halifax has also been associated with it and will probably send his children. But I think over half of it are now come from outside the Maritimes. And my cousins and their kids there now, Louis Allen's son, Jonathan, I think sent his kids there this summer. And it's very important, Camp Kadima. And it seems to be a successful venture, not only for the maritime Jews, but for the expat maritime Jewish community. And I would think my son here in Toronto is thinking seriously of sending his children there next year. That's how how important it is. Camp Kadima, amazing. Yeah. But it was not part of my youth. South Bar was. South Bar was my summer memories.
What did you do there?
South Bar, I mostly did woodwork and gardening, and my uncle next door had a tennis court and tried to teach me tennis. As I said, I wasn't much of an athlete. I wasn't a good tennis player. Picked blueberries behind the Gorelick's cottage. Just enjoyed last summer. One day a week, we come into town to get a bath. We had a shower. It was cold. It was terrible. We didn't like to shower. But once a week, we'd come into town on Wednesday. We'd get a shower. We'd get cleaned up. And my mother would bake pies. And then we'd go back for the rest of the week. I always remember my Uncle Dave next door. Knew that I liked lamb chops. Used to make fun. I had a lisp, lamb chops. Used to call me lamb chops. He would give me feeds of lamb chops. There was a canteen on the way down to the beach. We'd go down to the canteen sometimes in the evening and get a hot dog. My cousin from New Waterford, Billy Leaf, who was my age, would come and we'd go together. I remember one summer we invented the term hesahunt, which is Jewish for hot dog. And we went to Mr. McLeod, who ran the canteen, and we asked for a Hesa Hunt, and he looked at us as if we were crazy. So that was our joke, Hesa Hunts. So no, we had many activities, but I loved to do woodwork, and I spent a lot of time gardening. Cut my finger off. See where it went in, cut it off to here. We had a power mower, and I was listening to it. I had tuned it up. And I lifted my hand. I said, thank God my hand wasn't there. And I looked, and it would have been cut off. So gardening was a big part. Anyway, we got into the car and we went in town, and the GOM doctors, Carl was David, the youngest. He said, "I'd sewed on a finger in the war. Let me, here." And he grabbed a button from the nurse. "Here, give me that." And he somehow, he sewed it back on. The button was to hold the metal in place. And then when he came out, it was stiff. He said, "Now let me cut it off." I said, "No, I want to be a doctor, and they'll never let me be a doctor with four fingers." He says, "Okay, go down to Woolworth's and buy a ball for 5 cents and put your hand in the sink." And I put my hand in the sink with that little ball. It took a year. And look at that. I put the joint. He says, "I made a good joint. You should be able to do that."
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I'd been a Boy Scout, and I was alone in the back when it happened. I noticed. I said, "Jeez, where are the pressure points?" Because I could exsanguinate. It just cut the skin here, but it cut it off. So I grabbed it, went up, and my father drove me down to my Uncle Benny's cottage, where his son-in-law was a doctor. He took care of me until we came into town. Yeah, that was South Bar. I would garden, and I would do woodwork, and I built airplanes. I had a lot of airplanes. We used to go to Balsa and different hobbies. Yeah, it was lovely so far. And I would visit the Gorelick, Gertie mostly, over at their cottage. Try to play tennis next door at Uncle Dave's place. It was always something to do all summer.
And when did you leave Cape Breton?
I guess there's two answers or three answers to that. I would say that I really left Cape Breton in 1955 when I graduated from high school to go to university.
What university did you go to?
Dow.
Okay. So did I.
Did you go to Dow?
I did, yeah.
What'd you do there?
Anthropology and philosophy at King's College.
So you got a BA at King's?
Yeah.
Well, my third son, who now lives in Toronto, went to King's in journalism.
Oh, really?
He took the basic year.
Which foundation year.
Foundation year. Mm-hmm. he was UTS student here, a good UTS student here in Toronto. And when he went down the first time, we rented a van, and I took my two youngest kids and drove to Cape Breton. And when we got to campus at Dow, my 8-year-old son said, "When I grow up, I'm going to move here and stay here and change my name from Epstein so I can be comfortable here." Anyway, he stayed true to his words. He now is on staff at Dalhousie.
Really?
Yeah, he's head of the internal medicine program. He's a gastroenterologist. He's married a girl from there who converted to Judaism. And they have three kids, and we visit them a couple times a year. So he fulfilled the prophecy of going to Dow, stayed at Dow, started out at King's, moved into a BA in I don't know what, and then got his diploma in public health, and then went into medicine, and then went into postgraduate, and then did post-postgraduate, and now he's on staff there. And that's why we go home, really, to see him in Halifax. And while I'm there, I have to go to Sydney to see my remaining cousins in the graveyard. And this year, we did the extra of the high school reunion. Yeah. So you're a Dow man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where'd you stay at Dow? In residence?
Or? I lived in residence for 1 year at the brand new residence. It was called Grizzly.
Oh, yeah.
And then I lived on Larch Street for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Right next to King's.
With a bunch of buddies?
With 10 other people.
10 other people.
Yeah, right. We lived in a house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I went, there was no Well, I shouldn't say there was no residence. There was a residence, a rat-infested cesspool on campus. Downstairs was a canteen, and upstairs were a few rooms that mostly the West Indian guys stayed in. But there was no residence. So we all had to board out. I boarded family, friends, and good boarding houses. But I ended up sitting at the top of the heap, the mayor's mother, Mrs. Kitts, had a place right below the shul there on Coburg Road, down by the Rag Waltic. And I never forget driving, walking, you know, after hours around, I said, there's a sign. It says, no dash or dogs allowed. This is 1957, 58. I said, Mrs. Kitts, what was rubbed out? She says, oh, that was several years ago. Used to be no Jews or dogs allowed in the Wag Waltic. Now my son is a member of the Wag Waltic, and a lot of the members of Jewish times have changed. Yeah. So I would say I left Sydney in 1955. I've never left Sydney in my heart. It's always been part of me. You can take the boy out of Cape Breton, but you can't Cape Breton out of the boy. So I left the first, really. But then when I graduated from medical school at Dal in 1962, we came up here for me to start postgraduate work in internal medicine at Sunnybrook. And I noticed my father in Montreal, we drove up with my mother and father, would not eat or could not finish his steak. And my father was like me, an average little man. He was little, but not round like me. That's my mother's family. But an average man. And I said, Dad, what's wrong? He said, oh, I fill up easy. I said, did you go to the doctor? He said, yeah, I went to the doctor. He made an x-ray, but it was the town drunk was the radiologist, and he lost the x-ray. So Dr. Glom said it was my nerves. I said, Jesus, Dad, you've never been nervous. That's not your nature. And you never, let's find out what's going on. So we drove from Montreal up to Toronto, and we got my cousin Bucky, who was from New Waterford, a radiologist, and he found a little ulcer in his stomach. Got him into the gastroenterologist the next day, and my brother and my son and my sister's husband was acting chief of surgery at the time at Mount Sinai. Got him in, took out his stomach, and they removed his cancer early, and he lived for many years after that. Fair enough. I would say I left Sydney, and my parents left Sydney because of my father's illness in 1962. But I made forays back.
And you keep in touch?
Yeah, I keep in touch, mostly because of my son in Halifax, and I make the extra trip back to Cape Breton. It's a beautiful place.
It is.
It is, really. I mean, geographically it's beautiful. The geography is beautiful. But the people are beautiful. You know, all my years in Cape Breton, I never got to Newfoundland for more than a few hours. So several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, approximately, my wife and I made a trip to Newfoundland. My God, it was beautiful. We drove we drove to the ferry in North Sydney and went to Newfoundland, and then we drove across the island up to the top over to St. John's and back. It was beautiful. It's like Cape Breton used to be. Friendly, homey, it was beautiful. So I did get to Newfoundland. I had briefly been to Newfoundland before. One winter, I wanted to go from Dal to Sydney by airplane. So I got out to the airport in Dartmouth at 6 o'clock, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, they drove us down, because it was all fogged in, down to the Annapolis Valley. And then the next morning at 10 o'clock, we finally took off. We got over Sydney, they couldn't land. So we went on to Cornerbrook, where we spent a day in the airport. But that was closest to Newfoundland I've ever been before, like a couple of years ago. And then we flew home to Sydney about 2 days later. My holiday was over, and I had to fly back to Halifax. But that was traveling in the Maritimes in the 60s. It was tricky stuff. And I was posted with the Canadian Air Force to our number one fighter wing in France one summer. And we stopped at Gander, but only for an hour or two. So I'd been to Newfoundland at the airports of Gander and Cornerbrook, but I never visited until to the recent thing. Yeah, Cape Breton and Newfoundland. So you've asked me about the shul in Sydney, the Temple Sons of Israel. Asked me about Kadima. You've asked me about my youth. I love talking. Huh?
Good.
Nobody listens to me anymore. No.
Here I am.
Yeah. So it's lovely. I hope you get a few sound bites out of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Family is so important. You'll see, this is called family memories.
Mm-hmm. What made you
do it?
What made you make the book? Yeah. Why'd you write the book?
Why'd I write it? Well, I've been a bit of a writer in my profession. Although I was a clinician at the University of Toronto, and that's like my father in Sydney, it's a worker bee position. It was not a queen bee type position. I refused to be put aside as just a clinician, and I would do a lot of clinical research, drug trials, and reporting of cases, and I like to write. I feel, geez, I get it down and I get it organized and I love it. And I've been collecting. You'll see, I'm going to show you upstairs all these memories over the years. And I was still in practice when I did this. So I didn't have a lot of time, but I had retired from the University of Toronto at age 65. So I had more time than I did previously. And so I did it. And then, as I told you earlier, my son, the computer expert, was able to put it together into a decent format. And my daughter-in-law's wife is a photographer, and she did the compositions. But basically, I did it from my offspring. Read at the back. It's 'cause these memories are going to be lost. So I did it for my kids. And this new book on the essays, also for my offspring. Yeah. I'm not a very observant Jewish person. We keep kosher in the house, and I go to shul if I can wake up on a Shabbos with my wife, who gets up early and goes. But I do have strong religious observances and a strong religious beliefs, and one of the essays I wrote is "I Believe." Someday maybe I'll get that book published. I'll get you a copy.
I'd like that. That'd be great.
So it has a lot of my philosophy in it. But this was book. This was done for my kids so that they would know where they came from. Very popular around that time was a TV production called Roots, the Negroes, about the blacks, and I felt that it's important to know your roots, and these kids are not going to know their roots unless somebody writes it down, because these things are all going to get lost, and that's why I did Family Memories. And as I said, it's a bestseller, up to 50 copies that I bought to give to my family, and Shirley Chardon now has one.
Fantastic.
She was a Wolfson. Yeah.
Marvelous.
And it brought you here.
Yeah.
So, my God. Well,
it worked.
It's working. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I must show you upstairs.
Yeah, shall we?
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
This is what you want?
This is exactly what I was looking for.
Okay. I did it in a relaxed fashion.
Good.
With my Cape Breton accent.
Perfect.
Not my upper Canadian, clear, speaking voice.